the heart doesn't beat like a clock. If it does, you're almost dead, basically. Like it's not a tick-tock and consistent. There's a lot of variation in the heart rate. At least there should be. And that's exactly what the rings or your Garmin watch, modern Garmin watch actually does. And that variation tells us something about how stressed you are or how relaxed you are, how well you're recovering.
Hello everyone, this is Vikas and you are listening to Run with FitPage. It is episode number 159 today and I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Paul Larson. Not only he's a great podcaster, he's an amazing researcher and also a great entrepreneur. You'll see from the conversation that we'll continue to mention of his venture, that is Athletica, AI-based training platform for athletes, elite or recreational alike. And you'll see also he's so well equipped to lead it, primarily also because he knows all about exercise science, as well as he knows about coaching, he knows about the relevance that it needs to be brought to be an outstanding coach and build a solution that can be brought at scale for people. We are not only talking about that, we are talking today about HIIT training, that is HIIT, high intensity interval training for endurance athletes and primarily for our target group, that is runners. Of course, equally important for triathletes, for other endurance athletes as well. And we will cover all about that in the conversation today. Let's welcome Dr. Paul Larson to the show and know all about HIIT training, its periodization, how do you implement this in your training, and what are some of the things you need to keep in mind before you get onto these training modalities. Let's welcome Paul to the show. Paul, welcome to Run with FitPage. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Like I was saying, as I was reading more about you through the book by Inigo, I got more and more interested in HIIT, and I see a significant time and interest of yours is in HIIT. And so we thought it would be great if you accept to be here and speak to us about it. And thank you so much for accepting the invite to be with us. We will, of course, talk about HIIT more in detail about endurance athletes. But how about we start with your background to set the relevance of the conversation?
Yeah, sounds good. Well, I guess I started in the world of running myself, and I was a young boy, and my father quit smoking when I was young, and to help him quit smoking, he picked up marathon running as his new addiction. So as a young boy, I would follow my father all around the trails because I wanted to be with him. And lo and behold, when I was a young boy, it turned out that I was a decent runner myself. And that led me on my journey to becoming an endurance athlete. And specifically, I actually progressed from just running, although I did many runs, but also to the sport of triathlon. And I saw this amazing race, like, you know, you, the listener, or you, because you may, you know, there might be some moment in life that really inspires you. And I had that moment back in 1989, and it was the sport of triathlon in the Hawaiian Ironman. And it was Mark Allen and Dave Scott, and they battled it neck and neck for many, many moments on the lava fields in Hawaii, neck and neck, right to the very end. And it affected me. It went right to my soul. And I knew I had to dedicate my life to being that as best I could. As the case goes with so many people that are in sport, we often don't quite get to the same level that, that our heroes do. I wanted to try and understand why I couldn't get as great success as those athletes. So I studied sports sciences, and I did bachelor's and master's at UBC, British Columbia, Canada, Vancouver, and then I got a scholarship to Australia, to the University of Queensland there, to do my PhD. And I did it in the topic that we'll speak on a little bit today, because I did that in the topic of HIIT, we say it, so HIIT, high intensity interval training. I wanted to understand what was the session that gave you the most bang for buck ultimately, because there's so many different ways we can do training. So I spent a whole 4 years researching that topic. And then my history continues. It wasn't just done with the PhD. I went and became a professor, and I worked with the Australian Institute of Sport in their Olympic program, supervising PhD students in many different topics. And then that work got me the attention of the New Zealand Olympic program, and I was brought on by the New Zealand Olympic program for two Olympic cycles. Both the London Olympic Games and also the Rio Olympic Games. So that kind of era, and actually I had the privilege of also going to the Delhi Games for the Commonwealth Games, and that was wonderful to visit your country and to experience the Commonwealth Games and the magic of the people of India. So but yeah, that work all kind of culminated for me in something we called HIIT Science, hitscience.com, and specifically our best-selling book, The Science and Application of High Intensity Interval Training. And we write a comparable chapter, as you alluded to, in Inigo's new book, The Endurance Training Science and Practice. So that's me in a nutshell from my background and some of my interests.
Awesome. And how did you continue to pursue a passion of continuing to be an athlete as well? Were you still doing it seriously? Was it more recreational? How was it?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer that we have to practice what we preach. We have to, and that we learn by doing. So we can't just, as beautiful as these reads and textbooks are, it's words on paper. We have to experience these things as well. And that really actually leads me to my next biggest innovation in trying to make a difference. And it's called, you'll see the logo there, Athletica. And Athletica is an AI training platform that uses all these principles, so you can actually experience these principles first and foremost in your training, and it's available for both athletes and for coaches.
Okay, before we get into details of HIIT training, should we spend some time on Athletica, because you brought the topic of it, and I wanted to cover this for sure. So. What exactly are we doing here? What I understand that we are using exercise science and various modalities of it inbuilt, and that takes feedback as the athlete progresses. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's right. So it's exactly it. So in a simple level, what you would do is, let's say you've got mostly half marathon and marathon listeners. So if you're passionate about the sport, you will see a date in the future and you'll be inspired to go and do that race. It has a certain date. You would plug that race date into Athletica, and then you would need to have a wearable. So you need to have a modern day wearable that Garmin is typically the best. We hook up to Garmin Connect, but we also, any other wearable that will hook up to Strava, for example, as well, would be the other one. If you have any of those devices or any of those means, you have a race date, you have a wearable, you hook the two up and tell us a little bit about yourself, and you have an adaptable training plan that can be used individually as an athlete if you want to be self-coached. We also have a coaching program as well for coaches that want to come in and leverage Athletica and have multiple coaches on that, because it assists the coach as well to provide these adaptive training plans. We use many of the principles in the book, and one of those is called training load. I don't want to bog us down into the weeds, but basically, if we can follow these patterns of stress, and if you're really stressed on one day, the AI should pick that up, and it shouldn't give you another hard session the next day. And that's exactly what it does. So it mixes and moves all of the different sessions in accordance with what does or with what doesn't get done. So say, for example, you're too busy, you're stuck in rush hour traffic and you can't get home and you can't do your training session. Well, that session doesn't get done. Athletica is going to take that into account as well and make the update accordingly for the next time that you get out. So it's quite helpful for that. And we're seeing a massive uptick. We're in an exponential growth right now because of the innovation that we've created. And we are very, very, it's exciting times for us at Athletica right now.
Fantastic. And it definitely is I think it's definitely not boring or too detailed. I think it's just right there. And that's exactly what actually the athletes have been looking for as well. If you see also from the variables, either type of variables, whether it's a watch or a ring or anything else that's giving feedback, athletes are starting to make sense of it and do apply these in their daily trainings. For example, for me, the moment I see my HRV being below, for example, 60 milliseconds, I'm not going to be doing a hard workout. I just feel that I'm not ready for it yet. And I have seen over a period of time, it just helps me. And just HRV is just one of those things. But the more you wear the variable and more you make sense of data, the more important it gets. And glad that someone like you has started this, because there's so much data that's available, but we are almost blinded because we don't know how to make sense of it. As I speak with athletes, what I hear of them saying is they still are worried about the number of steps. They still are worried about talking about their heart rate or how many beats per minute, primarily because of number of smartwatches showing your heart rate on a regular basis, continuous basis. But there's so much more that needs to be made sense of, right? Because if we understand that better, we can be far better athlete, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you said that so well, because I'll start back with your heart rate variability comment. So the user is clear, with heart rate variability, we often think of the heart as a clock. Do you know the movie The Wizard of Oz?
Yes.
I often use it. Do you?
Yes.
So do you know in The Wizard of Oz, we have the Tin Man?
Yeah.
And the Tin Man, he needs a heart, right?
Yeah.
And he wears this clock.
Yeah.
That's kind of over his, you know, like a necklace over to, but the heart doesn't beat like a clock. If it does, you're almost dead, basically. Like it's not a tick-tock and consistent. There's a lot of variation in the heart rate. At least there should be. And that's exactly what the rings or your Garmin watch, modern Garmin watch actually does. And that variation tells us something about how stressed you are or how relaxed you are, how well you're recovering. So that is, you know, I'm so glad that you brought up that example, Vikas, because that is what we've just implemented within Athletica. So you can get your overnight sleeping HRV if you have your Garmin watch that comes right in, and that's in your recovery profile. So we are using that data to curb your training. And yes, you mentioned another brilliant thing as well. There, we have data overload ultimately.
Yeah.
We have all this data, but what do we do with it? We recognize this. Athletica has been built for 10 years almost because we recognize this problem, and we do our best to synthesize the data. And then we actually leverage GPT to make it very simple at the end of the day so that we're actually, we're explaining what this means and what matters at the end of the day for your next session. So that is you get Athletica in a nutshell, because, and thank you for doing that, because very few people can really understand what we're doing. So thank you, sir.
Awesome. No, thank you. And maybe we can have a conversation just to talk about various parameters that athletes should look at when they are training, because it is not only training. And I think, you will be one of the most qualified people to help people understand that. But today's discussion, I think we should get into, is to talk about HIIT training, as you say. And again, it's possibly related to something that of Athletica various training components that you include, and one of those could be HIIT. When we speak with runners, at least I'm talking about my target group, they primarily are either recreational, amateur, good athletes, or they're trying to be good. They're not necessarily semi-elite or elite, barring a percent or less, for example. Now what happens is they have limited time, they have various constraints, and they still want to do well. A number of us are also around middle age or getting older, and that's where I guess the sweet spot is for various marathon runners at least. And at this point, all of us, we start to think of various hacks or training modalities or any other performance improvement ideas that could help them improve. And one of the things that I've been reading has been HIIT. And now when we speak to runners, there are two school of thoughts. One, they think either you do long distance running or you do HIIT. Meaning they will say, hey, if you are endurance runner, why do you need to do high intensity workouts? And if you're doing high intensity workouts, are you necessarily planning for sprints or are you planning for long distance marathon, etc.? So I wanted your help to start by explaining what is HIIT and does it really need to be included in a runner's training program? And if yes, then we'll talk about a lot many things as we progress.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. So high intensity interval training is defined as repeated bouts of high intensity exercise that are above your threshold. Many will know about their threshold level. Your threshold would probably be, you know, a pace that you're doing for like a 10-kilometer road race. Say you're doing a 10K road race, you're almost for sure going to be right on that pace and heart rate for the whole time. Now, so HIIT, by definition, is actually exercise that is at or above that exercise intensity, but it's only for short periods of time, separated by periods of rest or recovery or low intensity exercise. And then you repeat the stimulus again. And what they've discovered is that by doing it in this broken fashion, hard, easy, you can accumulate more high intensity work than if you were just going to do that 10K race. You could do, you know, that same intensity, but broken up, you know, as, you know, say your 10K race is 40 minutes. Well, you could actually break up that 40 minutes so that you're doing maybe 48 minutes. Say you do two extra reps if you broke it into 4-minute pieces, say, for example. So you would be able to do more work. And that leads, what's also been discovered through research is that leads to faster adaptations when it's done correctly. Now, one of the pitfalls you might have asked this is that, you know, can you get too much of a good thing? And yes, you definitely can, right? If you're all, you know, in the example that you gave me, Vikas, where we're just doing HIIT all the time, that's a risky strategy. And again, if I go back to the Athletica context, we like to have a balance. We like to have a balance of low intensity, L2 sessions, we call them, or zone 2 sessions is the big buzzword these days, plus that HIIT session that I just described, which can be done so many different ways, and we can talk about that there.
Sure. So let me be there for a minute in terms of the intensity. So people who have been doing 10K and above, they will possibly understand what it means to be at 10K effort. It's quite hard, and I find it's pretty painful to do a 10K than a half marathon. Will it be like high zone 4 is what we would call it in terms of intensity, and more like a VT2 kind of ventilatory threshold 2 is the kind of effort that we would consider where it should be, or no?
Perfect. You nailed it you nailed it, because that is exactly it. So again, in Athletica, we break up our zone model into a 5-zone model too. So you've just described zone 4, which is really your threshold point. So it should be zone 4 or above, zone 4, zone 5, zone, and, you know, pace zone 6 and 7 if we have a 7-zone model. So quite hard. And then you also mentioned VT2. So this is the second ventilatory threshold, or also sometimes called the maximal lactate steady state. That's another landmark point. Critical power, critical speed, these are other places. So yes, that's another place, and it should be at or above that as well for these broken pieces.
Sure. Now, the HIIT training, does it have to be a running only HIIT training, or can it be any other workouts?
Yeah, you're very, very insightful questions. I'm impressed. So no, and that's exactly it. So, you know, in the context where, you know, you mentioned that some of your listeners might be older athletes. And sometimes when we're older athletes, like myself, we deal with some musculoskeletal strain, some little bit of niggles and whatnot. And we really, when we do these types of workouts like HIIT, which, you know, the young can usually handle these very well, but us older athletes, it can hurt us a little bit more. Because, you know, we're really opening up our legs and whatnot. So, you know, quite large range of motion and high force at large range of motion. And, you know, what you can still do, however, as you alluded to, is you can do this in a different format. You could do your HIIT exercise rowing. You could do your HIIT exercise cycling. And in both of those exercise modes, there is less musculoskeletal strain. There's less neuromuscular stimulus, and there's less soreness that's usually associated with cycling compared to running. Imagine doing a HIIT session, running versus cycling. You know which one you're going to be more sore from typically. You're typically going to be more sore from a run session. It's going to feel a lot like you're running downhill sometimes, because these are what are called eccentric contractions. So the muscle lengthens under tension, and we actually have rippage of the muscle fibers at the microscopic level. And those actually, the stimulus is that heals up and you develop more resiliency for later. But in the acute phase, it's quite painful, right? And you know how you feel after a big race. And that's called delayed onset muscle soreness. If you're hitting yourself with DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness, all the time, it's not a very repeatable sort of thing, right? So you can get away from that by switching up the exercise mode. As mentioned, do this rowing or do this cycling. And what do you get from that? Well, you still get the heart and lung stimulus. You're still building up the power of the heart, because that's one of the biggest adaptations that we should be after when we do a HIIT session. When you're just doing your L2, zone 2 session, you don't get the same big output from the heart. We call this cardiac output or stroke volume. Right? The cardiac output is the amount of blood that is pumped around the body in a minute. Right? At rest, we're sitting here around 5 liters. At exercise, it could be 25 liters a minute, or it could be up to 40 liters a minute in our elites. Now, if we don't get that stimulus, if we only save that stimulus for the race itself, you're kind of leaving stuff on the table. So if we do HIIT exercise, and this can be done both in the running format, but it can also be done cycling, rowing, or what, name your exercise mode that is not as hard on the rest of the muscles. It's a really interesting strategy to kind of periodize into your training plan. So I love that you asked that question, because...
Awesome. Thank you. Now, another related question with this is, does it mean that your heart rate should be elevated at a particular level regardless of any exercise that you're doing, whether it's rowing, cycling, running, or even strength training? If it's HIIT, will you still consider that be equally helpful? Why I'm saying this is does it require your lower extremities at work as well, because you're going to run at the end of it, or it's primarily to do with your heart rate at a particular intensity?
Yeah, so I mean, I think what we're really trying to talk about here is we're talking about the targeting of the heart and its function, right? We're talking about the targeting of cardiac output that's going to hopefully at the end of the day lead to increases in VO2 max, maximal oxygen consumption, right? Like that's, the heart is one of the key drivers of that variable, and it's one of the variables, there are others, but that's one of the key ones that we should probably be targeting when we are, when we're focusing on our training. So, and you know, a lot of us don't walk around with a metabolic cart where we're capturing the amount of oxygen that we're breathing out, but we can get an indicator of what that might be at by looking at our heart rate, just like you alluded to, because so you mentioned all these exercise modes, and I would say, yes, all of those can be used. Swimming, cycling, running, rowing, they can all be used to target that. The only one that's hard is the strength training. So the strength training is, it's kind of one of these exercise modes that it is hard to kind of get into the targeting level where it's up close to the max heart rate level, right? So when you're targeting heart rate, it should be close to your max heart rate, whatever that might be, right? Like, so that's usually 220 as a number minus your age is a predictive number, but it's quite variable, and it varies from person to person. So you should be able to achieve that on typical exercise modes, but strength training, I've got a gym here behind me, it's really hard to kind of see high levels of heart rate in those kinds of things. Although, you know, you might have, you know, certain circuit trainings, you might kind of see that, but that's usually not what you're going for in those. We tend to, our philosophy is save the strength work, which is also super important. Save that for the gym, and then target the target your heart kind of work on any of those other exercise modes that I mentioned.
Sure. No, that's helpful. Thank you for that again. We'll get into more to talk about how to do HIIT training, how to implement these protocols, etc. But before that, one other question I had, and I see that HIIT being considered one of the ways to also lose weight. And of course, if you are losing weight, in many ways, it may just be positively impacting your running economy. You have lesser body mass to take from point A to point B, etc. And that eventually may also lead to running performance. But after a point, many of us don't have a lot to lose. But I wanted to see, for people who may not be training for a marathon, but the primary purpose may be to lose weight, do we think that HIIT training is an effective way of doing it as well?
You know, it's not the, I would say it's honestly, it's not the most effective way. I would say look to your nutrition first. However, there's definitely a factor there with HIIT as well. Why? Because you often get increases in hypertrophy from it. So your muscle mass increases. Your level of hypertrophy or muscle mass that you're carrying around is one of the key factors. It's one of the most active resources of metabolic tissue in your body. So the more muscle we can kind of put on on our bodies, the greater our overall what we call basal metabolic rate. So it's certainly a contributor. At the acute level, I'm not so sure it's a huge thing. You know, in terms of, you're kind of going into the whole debate around calorie counting, and honestly, because I'm not a huge fan of the whole calorie counting thing. My philosophy is really focus on trying to get whole foods as best you can into your diet. If you can find whole foods, and that is really just anything that came from Mother Nature is the simplest thing, as opposed to processed food, which, you know, is plagued in our modern worlds. And this is a problem across the entire world. But yeah, the more you can kind of back away from the packaged processing and more towards what Mother Nature has provided, the better off you will generally be from a weight loss standpoint. And unfortunately, sugar is probably one of the largest culprits of that as well. It's hard to outrun a bad diet, unfortunately.
Yeah, no, indeed. And very interesting point, and we are digressing a bit, but I find it really fascinating. So I want to input that here, that for me, to think of non-processed food, how I apply this in my normal life and how I inform others is any food that requires, that comes in a packet which has nutrient values written on it, is in some way or another processed. So I try to bring food or fruits or vegetables in a way that doesn't have almost any packaging that has any nutrition value, nutrient value written on it. And I find that's one of the ways that I find it very easy to procure things, because that's what people ask. How do I go and find out what's processed, what's not processed? Is that right understanding?
That's perfect. That is the advice that you want to take. So that's what you should be giving to your listeners and those who follow you. So exactly that. Yep. Can't add it any further.
Thank you. Awesome. Now, moving to implementation of HIIT training. First, let's understand who should be the people who should implement HIIT training in their training. And but maybe before that as well, what could a HIIT training protocol may look like? That is, how many minutes of HIIT training versus what kind of rest interval? Is there any modality as such that recommends this much rest is needed or not needed? And then we get into when should we implement this?
Yeah, well, let's start with who first. Who should go and do HIIT training? And that's a really important question, because there's certain contexts where we probably shouldn't really be choosing HIIT as the first exercise type session. So for example, if you're sitting on the couch and you haven't been exercise training for a long time, and you just decide all of a sudden you're going to go do HIIT training, you know, maybe we're violating possibly there the principle of progressive overload. You might be hitting your body too hard too soon. So you really want to you said that the majority of the listeners are fairly established runners, right? So if they're fairly established runners, the majority, then that's sort of the starting point. You wanted to have gone from walking to running, and you're able to run steady for, you know, say 5-10K, right? That's not going to phase you too much. And if you can do that, then you're probably ready for HIIT training. We often say in HIIT science, we want to be healthy first. If you are healthy and well trained, you're ready for it. And then you're ready to meet that added stress and adapt from it, because that's what we want to do. So that's the very first step. Then how might be?
I have one small point, because I think it's relevant here. That is, most of the runners that I speak with and meet, and number of runners who recently Tata Mumbai Marathon happened, which is the largest marathon in Asia, and I spoke to at least 100 of them. And one thing I always hear from them, that is, they are doing moderately hard workout almost all the time. The concept of zone 2 is almost vanished for them, and they almost always feel they're slightly fatigued, and all of their workouts look slightly they look very similar to each other. And so I'm thinking, if that's the kind of TG is there, how should they implement that HIIT training in their training?
Well, I mean, you've kind of actually raised an important point. And I'm going to, unfortunately, bring up a new concept that, again, we could do probably another whole podcast on. But it's the concept of polarized training, and I'm sure you've heard of it. My very close colleague is Professor Steven Seiler. He writes the chapter before us. He will be definitely...
We had him on the podcast.
Excellent. Well, Stephen will have talked about polarized training, right? And, yeah. He will often talk about how it's just so easy to drift into that mid-zone phase, right? So that's what you've just described. You've described the bulk of the runners, and it's just so easy for us to kind of go into that mid-zone. Now, you talked about zone 4 before. Now we're talking about doing the majority of work in zone 3. That's the population. That's the 100 runners that you spoke to. They're hanging out in zone three all the time. And what Stephen and I are aligned on in terms of our thinking is how the best athletes in the world, they train easy, steady, most of the time. And that's the zone two training, right? So your zone two training should be the bulk. That's the 80%. And then the 20%, that's when you bring on the HIIT training, right? And you do the real targeted focus things. But if you're always doing the mid-zone training and you bring on the HIIT training, it doesn't work that well because now you're adding stress on top of an already stressed athlete and you're not ready to absorb that training. So you kind of have to break down and reframe your philosophy and the structure of your training first. And then you're ready to accept the HIIT training. Then we're able to give you specific sessions to target towards your event and really get good results. You want to impress all your friends, do something a little bit different that we're kind of, you know, talking about here.
For sure. Sorry I asked this question between. I know you were continuing to talk about who is it right for, et cetera. And then I obstructed, apologies, but I thought this was important to address.
Well, no, it's really important because, you know, when we started, I talked about the person that hasn't had any experience, but you brought up the other person that probably shouldn't do it. And it's the person that's always training in their mid zone kind of hard all the time. And, you know, I didn't mention it, but that was me. That was me training when I gave my background. That was what I was doing too much. I didn't know any different because, you know, it was back in the 80s and there was no study about it really. And I didn't have any coach. And all I was doing is, you know, my whole philosophy around how I was going to be the best triathlete in the world, I was just going to train harder and longer than all of them all the time. And that's what most of us kind of think. And of course, we now know that that's not what you want to do, right? There's a much better road to Rome is a saying we often use in the Western world. So yeah, there's a better road to the Mumbai Marathon.
for sure it is. Now my other part of the question was, as we started, what exactly will be considered HIIT training in terms of duration, and what kind of rest intervals should be included as someone starts to think of implementing HIIT in their program?
Yeah, so now you bring up a really important saying that we often have. I don't know where it came from, but it's in the English vernacular, and it's we often say that there's more than one way to skin a cat when it comes to training. I don't understand it, but that's the saying. And it just basically means is that there's so many different ways to form HIIT. And, you know, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty, get my book or take our course. We can explain it to you and whatnot. But or it's explained in Indigo's book as well. Take your pick, whatever you like. But let's see. Simply, these are integrated into Athletica as well. So if you want to experience them yourself, I think that's the best way of learning. Check out Athletica, free 2-week free trial. So you can even experience those there as well. But basically, maybe there's two interval types that I think are advantageous for the half marathon or the marathon runner. And those would be short intervals and long intervals. Now, short intervals, these are, you know, periods of exercise of, between 10 and 30 and 60 seconds of hard work at zone six, followed by short periods of recovery, typically passive, but, sitting around, you know, passive or just, you know, barely active, sitting around zone one, really, really easy, or just walking and resting. And when you do this repeatedly for various different sets, you get these really great adaptations in both your fast twitch, your larger fast twitch motor units, and back to the cardiovascular adaptations that I mentioned before. So a classic example of that would be a 30-30 session. So this would be, say, for example, 30 seconds on, or, you know, even like this might be, you know, 200 meters running on the track followed by 100 meter walk. 200 meters running really hard, 100 meter walk. Repeat that kind of from the, that's a short interval context. And you might do that 8 times, then, you know, jog easy, and then you do another set of that. So that's a typical 30-30 session or thereabouts. That's just kind of an example. And then, you know, and you could do that on the bike as well too. That's another good one to do on the bike, is a 30-30, sets of 30-30. And then the second example of a good HIIT session, Vikas, is our long intervals. These are often called VO2 max intervals. So typically VO2 max intervals, these might be something that, you know, imagine Stephen might have talked about these types of intervals if you got them there. But, you know, these might be like, you know, doing 2 minutes hard followed by 1 minute easy, or, you know, up to 4 minutes really hard, zone 5, and then two minutes easy, passive walking. And then again, and the distances would vary. And of course, it depends on your pace, but, you know, 1K efforts followed by a two minute walk jog kind of thing. And you know, how many you do? Well, it really depends on the person, right? So you could have a very elite marathon runner who might be doing 10 of these, but you might also, if you're just starting out, you might be doing 1 or 2, right? So it really depends on your ability. And a really good progression would be, you know, where am I sort of sitting on some of these long intervals? And, you know, start with where you're at, but then try to add one extra long interval in the next week. It's the same with the short intervals too. Try to add one extra set of those 30-30s, right? And, you know, start with just 6 of them done once. Let's start with 6, do them twice. These are the sorts of progressions. So keep adding on week after week. Don't do them the next day, but you know what you did that 1 week. Give your body lots of time to recover, and then go and try and do that the next week. Again, if you're on Athletica, the progressions are all there, and we walk you through these and adapt them accordingly.
Awesome. And yeah, Stephen did talk about it. And the target that he gave, if I remember correctly, that is over a period of time, you should try to accumulate up to 30 minutes of HIIT training over various various intervals, and he said you can start by thinking of 15 minutes in the start and try to gradually progress with the regular progression of up to 10% in terms of volume or intensity, and then go up till 30 minutes. So he did mention that. Now the question will be, will you consider stride to be a HIIT workout?
Strides. So you're not talking the stride power meter. You're talking about doing strides. You know, I would consider strides as a form of HIIT, but it's more of a neuromuscular. I would put it, we classify that as in our classification as a type 6 type workout, because, so yeah, it's certainly a form, but it's a little bit like the strength training one. It's a very much a neuromuscular kind of targeting. Very important. Because you're really working on things like technique. We know that running economy or running efficiency is very important, right? So, like how you actually run is one of the key factors in terms of how you can, you know, apply that force and then move efficiently with the application of that force into the ground. And strides are going to be assisting you to do that. It is a form of HIIT. They are often included in some of the Athletica workouts. As we almost use them as a warm up, as a priming before your key set, right? Because you can do them in the beginning because you're a little bit, you're primed, or your body should be mostly recovered. You're not fatigued yet, so you should be, you know, you should have that cognitive ability to kind of learn and put down proper biomechanics before, you know, you might fall apart a bit. You might get a little sloppy after doing four HIIT workouts kind of thing, or, you know, four HIIT repetitions.
Got it. Now, in terms of rest intervals for HIIT, does it matter whether someone takes a 2 minutes rest interval or 3 minutes rest interval, or it is okay to recover fully and then restart the next round? Suppose someone is doing a 2 minutes on and then next 2 minute off, or can it be 3 minutes as well or 4 minutes or not?
Yeah. So again, the context that we're sort of speaking about here is either probably we're talking about the set recovery or the recovery like in the 30-30s, say for example, in the short intervals, that recovery, you know, it could be 30 seconds on and 30 seconds off. So we're not talking about that one. We're talking about the recovery in the set. Or if we're doing 1K efforts, say, for example, where we're talking about the recovery after that, right? And again, I'm going to steal some of Steven Seiler's work. He actually did some research on this where he compared in his research recoveries from 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and 4 minutes after a long interval. And what he found was no difference ultimately between 2, 3, and 4 minutes, really. And, you know, in terms of the ability to maintain high levels of VO2 max during your workout, which is typically the goal. I mean, remember what you were mentioning before, where Stephen was saying, you know, between 15 and 30 minutes of accumulated time at VO2 max. So the best ability to get that was, it turned out from Stephen's research, was around 2 minutes. But keep it really easy and passive. Remember that you will get the best bang for buck on your workout if your effort phase is on the, if your effort and focus is on the effort phase. So don't worry about keeping your intensity high during the recovery. We used to think that, you know, active recovery was really important because it cleared lactate. And that's just all wrong. The key thing you want to do is fully recover so that your mind and body can completely focus on the work interval. That's when you get the most bang for buck. That's when you recruit the larger fast twitch muscle fibers. And that's when you get the largest stretching of your ventricles in your heart for adaptation of stroke volume. So again, according to Stephen's research, 2 minutes walking or walk jog kind of thing is best practice between your VO2 max intervals, your long intervals.
And how does one periodize these in their training program? Should they start to look at implementing once a week, twice a week? How should I start to think of if I want to implement HIIT training in my weekly training module, for example?
Yeah, I think you know, it will always depend on the individual. So if you've never done these before, then you start with once a week. If you're already doing one, well, then maybe you can progress up to two and see how that feels. If you're an advanced athlete, you could, you know, probably handle three of these, but very, very advanced, right? And again, this is, you generally want to apply these. I think also it would depend on the phase that you're in too, right? So let's look at how we do this in Athletica. In Athletica, if you are in the off season, we are only prescribing one of these in a week and it's a light one. Okay. So, but then as you build towards your half marathon or your marathon, you're going to be getting, you know, you might be getting two of these per week, or if you're a high volume athlete on our high volume program, you might be getting three of these as you get closer. So we have base weeks and we have build weeks and recovery weeks. Base weeks, only one. Right, when you're sort of starting out, build weeks 2 to 3 as you get closer to your key pinnacle event, which just, you know, again, you know, you mentioned before, because that the principle of specificity, right? So as we're getting closer to the event, we're getting more and more specific to race pace and HIIT that's supporting our ability to perform at race pace or above.
Yeah. Yeah. And peaking at the right time is important too. So like what you alluded to, it should not be that you start out too much too soon and then later you don't have a lot left to improve on. And I think if people have races and they have a date that's fixed for them, they want to, of course, they can use Athletica and that will help them do the entire work for them, or they need to periodize appropriately so that they are peaking at the right time.
Absolutely, for sure. And that's the key. And that's, you know, you mentioned you bring up the taper, really, right? And you know, no doubt Indigo will speak on in his book here about the importance of the taper. Remember, the taper is the period of time in the training plan when we are reducing the volume of training, we're increasing the intensity a little bit more HIIT, but it's there's a little bit more freshness that's kind of coming. And this allows us to peak the taper sort of facilitates that that peaking. The taper facilitates freshness, and yeah, it allows us to perform all the training that we've absorbed across the period of time that we've trained for this event. We're now exposing this and putting it on display at the race that's important for us.
Right. I think you should pass on a message to Inigo for sure. Is there any way to reduce the cost of the book so that it becomes affordable for people? I guess it's fairly expensive. I love the book, so I made sure I got it shipped here. But I think the same content can be made available to such a broader set of public if it's more affordable.
Yeah. Look, hey, I know it's probably the biggest feedback that Inigo gets, I think you'll have to reach out to him yourself, and I'm sure with the right volume of purchases, any price can be reduced, right? I think he's self publishing it or something, so it's his kind of his break even publication cost. So but yeah, he's well aware of that feedback and. Yeah.
No, just because we mentioned the book many times, I brought that.
Oh, I know. Unfortunately, look, I nothing but agree with you. He would probably agree too, but it was, I'm not involved in the cost or the business of it. Yeah.
No, it's just that the book is so fantastic. I think it just deserves to go to the normal public and also should be translated in a few other languages too. And specifically in India, for example, if we are looking at, I would think this will become more like a Bible for coaches. And if it's available in Hindi as well, for example, so much more value. But I will write to Inigo separately. We were discussing this, so I brought this topic because $200 is a lot of money for sure.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, for sure. Tell him you spoke to Stephen and Paul, who are co-authors in his book. Yeah.
Sure. I will do that.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to, maybe the last question in this is, as people move to taper, should their HIIT training still be part of it?
Yes.
Or should they reduce the intensity of it or the volume of it? It's important is because I have seen these rookie mistakes being done by a number of us.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you get very excited because the event's going is really, is soon. And the rookie mistake would be to put all of the, the effort into the HIIT training that you're so, and not in the race itself. So indeed, the volume of both the overall program should be reduced and the volume of your HIIT training should be reduced as well. So, you shouldn't turn it off, right? You shouldn't do nothing. That's another rookie mistake. So it's about finding the balance and just getting it just right. And again, sorry to keep mentioning Athletica, but that's what we try to do because we try to, it is so difficult to get that right. So it's nice to have an assistance coach and a AI algorithm that's showing you, this is probably, Here's what the AI suggests, and then you know the AI doesn't know everything, right? Like just to be kind of clear, you really always need to use common sense. But it's nice that it's there, and nice when you look at that set, and you're like, yeah, that makes sense. That's what I should do. So we're getting more and more feedback. The longer we go with this, and Athletica has been in production since 2020, and the longer that people are on it, kind of like you were saying, the more Athletica gets them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, for sure. Fantastic conversation, Paul. Thank you so much for being with us. And I know we can keep chatting. The time will not permit it at this stage, but I would definitely look forward to having another chat in future on one or two other topics that I have definitely taken away from here. Before we sign off, I wanted to see, is there anything else about HIIT training that's just out there and I have not covered, a very obvious one, and that you would like for people to know or be aware of? If not, then we will sign off today.
I think the very last one that's really important to mention, and we kind of alluded to it, but I want to make sure it's crystal clear. And that is that, you know, and this is our central, you know, our central hypothesis or, you know, our central mission with HIT Science is it's not about this no pain, no gain. Now, unfortunately, the CrossFit, world has really kind of taken that you have to go to exhaustion. You got to kill yourself out there. And it's really, it's, you know, it comes back to the individual that you mentioned where they're going hard all the time and they're drifting into their zone three. And it's the same sort of thing with HIIT training. And so the last thing I want to leave the listener with is the fact that it's not about no pain, no gain. You should always leave your HIIT training session like you could have done one or two more efforts. That's really, really important because the most important session is the next session. That's it. Because training consistency at the end of the day wins out. You know, you talked about rookie mistakes. You won't have rookie mistakes if you are consistently training day in and day out with the right amount of stress every time. And that includes the HIIT sessions. So a balanced training program and a consistent training program and sessions where it's not about no pain, no gain is going to be your best road to Rome or road to Mumbai marathon.
For sure.
Leave it there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being with us today. Very insightful conversation, very interesting. And I look forward to speaking with you again. That was all. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed a lot talking to him. And if you have any follow-up questions, please let me know. And I'll make sure that I request him to help answer these. Good luck, and I'll speak with you guys next week again. Bye.